Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and this summer we've been taking a closer look at public housing developments that comprise one in every 13 rental units in New York City. Sometimes overlooked in the politicians' rush to deal with middle-class problems and issues, public housing and poverty have cropped up in the presidential campaign, at least on the Democratic side. New York Times columnist David Brooks noted in a recent column in which he compared and contrasted the approaches to these issues of John Edwards and Barack Obama that, quote, Edwards would create 1 million housing vouchers for working families. These would, he argues, quoting Edwards here, enable people to vote with their feet to demand safe communities with good schools, unquote. And this from Edwards' campaign website. Too many low-income families are segregated in high-poverty neighborhoods, cutting them off from jobs and good schools and creating areas of concentrated poverty that undermine other anti-poverty programs. And as Brooks noted, Obama, by contrast, builds his approach around the Harlem Children's Zone, meaning helping people in place. Here is a clip of Barack Obama in his speech on July 18th in Washington.
The philosophy behind the project is simple. If poverty is a disease that infects an entire community in the form of unemployment and violence, failing schools and broken homes, then we can't just treat those symptoms in isolation. We have to heal the entire community.
So let's talk about that. We have guests, and we can't have you on the phones at 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. I'm joined by City Councilwoman Rosie Mendez, Democrat from District 2, which is kind of East 35th Street to East 1st Street in Manhattan, David Jones of the Community Service Society, and Julia Vitullo-Martin of the Manhattan Institute. Welcome, all of you, this morning. Hello.
Hello.
Hello. How are you?
And is this debate on the national level good for New York City public housing tenants, David Jones?
I think it is. Obviously, I tend to lean to the notion of waiting for people to be able to move to other communities. Doesn't seem like a very positive strategy. I think we have a lot we can do. And I think talking about the Harlem Children's Zone is a good example, but there are many other examples throughout the city.
Harlem Children's Zone, for people who don't know, is an intensive program to try to improve the lives of children in particular in one particular low-income area of Harlem, correct?
But you can, there are other examples. Congressman Floyd Flake, the former congressman, and his work around his church and the community they've created around it has turned a community which had many problems into one of the more thriving communities, actually with one of the highest voting rates anywhere in the city of New York. And that's a predominantly African-American community.
So, Councilwoman Mendez, as a matter of policy, as a policy dispute, really, in the presidential primaries, do you think Obama gets it more than Edwards?
I believe so. What I've seen is, even when you put vouchers out there, a lot of residents can't find the housing. A lot of owners won't rent to certain residents. There's a lot of paperwork involved. So we really need to incentivize the program, cut down on the paperwork, and just putting more vouchers doesn't solve the problem.
And yet there is an issue of concentrated poverty, right? That even people who grew up in the neighborhood and become middle class, by and large, take it as a means to escape the neighborhood and don't resettle there.
I think they do that for a number of reasons. One of them, obviously, is they can't get the kind of vital services they want in terms of adequate schools and police protection and a whole range of things. If the society is willing to invest, I think you then get a diverse population with middle class and working class and poor people, and you can have a healthy community out of that.
Julia Vitullo-Martin, where are you on this particular policy debate?
Both Councilwoman and David have made an interesting point about vouchers, which is the Section 8 vouchers. Section 8 vouchers have been, for a long time, seen as one alternative to continuing to build public housing. And one of the difficulties with them is that they actually, in practice, have had a tendency to resegregate and reconcentrate poor people, the most notorious example being in the southern suburbs of Chicago. The Chicago Housing Authority used Section 8 extensively to deconcentrate its public housing, but many of former CHA tenants simply reconcentrated in very poor communities.
That's the City Housing Authority, CHA.
The
right?
Chicago Housing Authority, right.
Yes.
And we have a similar phenomenon in New York State by which many Section 8 vouchers have been people from the Bronx, poor people from the Bronx, have taken their Section 8 vouchers and moved to upstate cities where they have often reconcentrated in poor neighborhoods.
Let's take a phone call. Laura in Harlem. Laura, you're on WNYC. Thanks for calling.
Thank you for taking my call, Brian. I agree with with the Edwards Initiative about refocusing efforts to eradicate pockets of poverty that are prevalent in many, many communities. In Harlem, for instance, there's a growing number of we are looking at a transition of the community from affordable to low income, being pushed out to very wealthy people being moved in. And that's a wonderful thing for the community. Why can't people who are of, conservative means, why can't they enjoy that? I think Obama's riding the coattail of Edwards. These issues only come up when an idea, or maybe one of his campaign managers say, oh, well, maybe we should implement that into our little campaign now. I think Edwards have a really wonderful agenda. I don't think he's going to make it because everyone is so focused on Obama being the first black president. I am concerned about the reshifting of poverty from one pocket to another pocket, state to state. In order for this country to work, we're going to have to work within with around each other. In order for poor people to feel like there's some kind of hope and to eradicate the sense of hopelessness, you have to keep them in a community where they can, where they want to excel, where they want to say, oh my God, I want to go to college, I want to come back and get to my community. They don't want to come back to a community where it's infested with drugs and crime and police officers who have a nonchalant attitude about, looting and everything else that's going on in the community because there isn't gentrification.
Laura, thanks for speaking up. And Councilwoman Mendez, do you want to engage Laura?
What I'm seeing now is more families are opting to stay in public housing. I lived in public housing for 23 years. At that time, we didn't have ceiling rents. So when I was getting ready to graduate from college, our rent was going to go up. And at that time, we could move out into the private market, rent, or buy a home, which my father did. But those options are not available anymore. And public housing has 44% working families. Only 16% of the households are on public assistance right now. But the challenge is bringing those needed social services to those 16% who are there.
But, Brian, if the vouchers are only being accepted by a certain management or building owner, that eliminates the
right. It reconcentrates poverty in different ways, you're saying.
Right. And also, you got to remember, they're shifting in 1996 with the whole, moving, the welfare to workfare. They didn't move them to workfare. They shifted them from state roles, welfare roles, to the federal roles. And vouchers are being utilized in different states like Jersey City, Baltimore City. They're being utilized as another form of welfare because a lot of these people who are getting these vouchers are not working class. They're young kids who can't afford to pay their rent because they haven't completed high school. They don't have any work experience. So right. They're being offered these vouchers.
Laura, I'm going to leave it there and move on and get some other reaction and then go on to some other pieces of this. But David Jones from the Community Service Society.
Yeah, and I think we, off from where the councilwoman mentioned, I think the waiting list for public housing, which has now become almost an icon of why these units are so important, of 130,000 people waiting more than 9 years to get into public housing indicates what a housing crunch. We can't take this public housing in isolation from the major problem that's emerged in terms of housing for the working poor in the city of New York. That has to be the critical function, to lift it out and say, oh, we're only talking about public housing, and not realize that so many other deep subsidy programs for the working poor and housing have been drifting away, particularly under the last Republican administrations.
Right. And Julie Vitullo-Martin from the Manhattan Institute, with all the pressure on housing in the city that all the guests, all of you have been talking about, plus the caller, tightest rental market ever right now, according to published reports. Do the city housing authorities' problems get overlooked because of the also very real pressure on the middle class? I mean, yesterday we heard that the legislature and the city have reached agreement on a new 421A tax credit program that will require developers to set aside a certain number of units for low and moderate income residents. But maybe that's an example of overlooking the needs of the poor people who live in public housing.
Well, it's a very good point, I think, to try to look at public housing, the New York City Housing Authority, in the context of the entire housing market of New York. And I think this is a good time to bring up the elephant in the room for public housing, which is that NYCHA is running a tremendously large annual operating deficit. This year it's something like $270 million. And the consequences of that are enormous for the people who live in public housing, because this stock is a very old stock. Public housing started in the 1930s. The worst buildings in the system are the 21 projects built by the city or the state rather than by the federal government. All public housing all across the country has the problem of decreased subsidies by the federal government. In New York, we have the double problem of a chunk of these projects, the 21, not getting federal subsidies and having their subsidies by the city or the state slashed. Now, my proposal here is something that probably David won't agree with, but I would like to see NYCHA look at its resources, which are tremendous, look at these amazing properties that it has, 343 developments across the city, and consider and, you know, analyze them the way a private owner would and say, we have this huge operating deficit. Nobody's going to help us out. Even if they help us out in the short run, they're not going to help us out in the long run. We have to consider the possibility of selling a couple of these projects. My advice would be to take the projects that are in the worst shape but are in good neighborhoods, one or two, and experiment with semi-privatization.
And so, Councilwoman, let me get you on this, because we already have Mayor Bloomberg saying NYCHA, New York City Housing Authority, has to pay for itself. It has to be self-supporting. It can't run these big deficits, and rent won't cover it. So they're looking at selling off parking lots as one solution. What do you think of how far Julie Vitullo-Martin wants to go?
Well, I'm against privatization, and when, you know, NYCHA is the oldest public housing authority, the first one in this country, and it's the premier one. You know, it has the most, approximately 179,000 units, and the first building is, the first public housing was created in my district, First Houses, in 1936. So it is an old housing stock. However, government created it. We have a responsibility at all levels of government to put money to preserve it. In 1937, under the Wagner-Stiegel Act, we moved about making public housing about construction jobs to make it about affordable housing with low rent for the poor.
But Julia, are you talking about privatizing in a way that helps the people who are there now purchase the units?
Yes, exactly. I'm proposing that NYCHA consider the very successful model that the Atlanta, Georgia Housing Authority has already used, which was to assess this entire system. Atlanta had been one of the most troubled systems in the country. Assess the entire system, choose a few projects that they felt were valuable enough to redevelop 40% market rate, 40% former public housing tenants and 20% very poor people.
David Jones from the Community Service Society. Well, could that work in New York? And maybe that empowers poor people
more than
the rest of
it. I think you can compare Atlanta and the scale of the problem we have in New York. We have 500,000 people living in public housing. We have a burgeoning rate of homelessness because of housing-related problems. And we also have some other things to do. By the way, when I was on the board of Health and Hospitals Corporation, I have no difficulty with vacant land being used to be sold for cross-subsidy. But the notion
including
of...
Including these parking lots?
Absolutely. Whatever it takes, I'm willing to do. But I don't want to mess with the units that are currently assigned to people who are in desperate need of housing. Moreover, the city and the state are actively involved in sort of draining more money out of the system. Public housing, as many of your listeners may know, are charged for their police services. I assure you the people on, you know, York Avenue and in the fancier sections of New York aren't. They're also charged taxes. The Museum of Modern Art that gets $20 a viewer and really doesn't serve the poor that much doesn't pay any taxes because it's a not-for-profit. There's an abuse going on here that is not acceptable.
And when you say they're charged for their police services, you mean NYCHA as an institution of the government has to pay the city as an institution?
Yeah, they're the only ones in the city. It's bizarre. This becomes out of an artifact where public housing used to have its own police force. They eliminated that many years ago, and they could still continue to charge them a fee.
They used to be the housing police, the transit
police. They
have
no different kinds of services whatsoever.
Let's take another phone call. Jim in Lake Hopatcong, you're on WNYC. Hello, Jim.
Hi, Brian.
Go ahead, Jim.
Well, I just wanted to go back to one of your guests was talking about Section 8 in Chicago, and I thought we were missing a little bit of context in that the Chicago Housing Authority was party to a lawsuit for racial discrimination in the public housing, and one of the things that they ended up doing was setting up a program that gave counseling to Section 8 recipients so that instead of just giving them the voucher, sending them out there, they give them counseling, help them find places, you know, that are a little better neighborhoods.
Jim, thank you for your call. And Alex in Manhattan, I think, has a related point. Alex, you're on the air. Oh, we have a terrible line, Alex. I think I'm not going to be able to take this call.
Brian, may I comment on what the first caller said?
Julia Vatula-Martin, go ahead.
What the caller's completely right. He's talking about the Gautreaux decision, which by which a federal judge said the Chicago Housing Authority had deliberately racially segregated its housing projects over the years and had to correct that. And the caller is also completely right that the Chicago set up a very sophisticated counseling system to help tenants find better housing. The sad part of this is that the consequence was, nonetheless, despite all these good intentions, that poor people from Chicago used their vouchers for a variety of reasons to resegregate themselves in the southern suburbs like Harvey and Blue Island. So the effect was not good. The consequence was not good.
Mm-hmm. Right. So even the voucher program wound up resegregating. But Councilwoman, on the issue of whether NYCHA runs a deficit because of something having to do with NYCHA or something external, I mean, public housing, by definition, doesn't pay its own way. It's a subsidized housing system for the people who live in it. So is it just a matter of it being insufficiently funded by the government, or do we have to look at it and say, well, this is a, you know, a subsidized housing system, but for some reason this institution has to be self book balancing?
Definitely. The biggest part of the problem is that we're not adequately funding NYCHA. The federal government has consistently been underfunding NYCHA, specifically since 2002. Coincidentally, we engaged in a war that year, right? So we know where our money is going. And that's when NYCHA had to start dipping into their funds. For every dollar that NYCHA spends in operating expenses, the federal government only reimbursed it 83 cents. So there in itself is part of the deficit. The other problem is there's 21,000 units created by the city and state, and The state has not given any funding since 1998. This year, they put $3.4 million that they gave to NYCHA, and I could tell you in my district, $3.4 million maybe gets me cameras in some of my developments, and not in all of them. And last year, the City Council and Mayor Bloomberg, we put $120 million into NYCHA. We stopped funding NYCHA in 2002 because of the 9/11 fiscal crisis. So our 120, I feel, makes us whole at this point.
And 2 weeks ago, the group Community Voices Heard organized a tour of some public housing developments that have serious maintenance problems in an effort to draw attention to a bill on Governor Spitzer's desk right now. He hasn't said whether he'll sign it, that would up the amount that the state reimburses NYCHA for tenants on public assistance, called the Shelter Allowance Bill. Councilman Mendez, I know you were a part of that tour. David Jones, I presume you want the governor to sign that bill.
Absolutely. This is another sort of discriminatory pattern that we've gotten into. We pay private landlords about $400 to $500 for a two-bedroom. We only want to pay NYCHA $157. And this is, what are you doing here? The argument I've had with both city and state is I don't know where they think individuals who are forced out of NYCHA developments are going to go. The private sector is not producing units that are affordable.
Julia Vitula Martin, you want to weigh in on that?
Yes, I do. First, David's completely right about this discrimination. It's appalling on the shelter allowance bill that there's such a differential. But, you know, the reality of public housing in New York State and virtually every other place is that there's very little political support to continue subsidy for public housing. So advocates and the housing authorities, especially the better housing authorities like the one we have here in New York, have to face political reality here and figure out how to make public housing at least somewhat more self-supporting than it is. Otherwise, we're going to stay on this tragic decline of these projects. For example, on the west side, just west side of Manhattan, walk up Amsterdam Avenue and take a look at those projects that are city and state projects. Not all of them, but a lot of them on upper Amsterdam above 88th Street. And you'll see these are very badly maintained projects. And yes, it would be better if the federal and the state government supported these things, but they're not going to.
We're just about out of time. David Jones, the last word.
I'll be very quick. I think that's assuming the political status quo always remains this way. There was $50 billion put into farm subsidies over the last 5 years. We have one of the strongest Democratic avalanches about to occur, and I don't think it necessarily has to remain this way. There's enormous political strength in public housing that hasn't been activated by either Democrats or Republicans, and I think it's time to bring a political change where you have some equity here.
Thank you all for having this discussion. Thanks to our callers who chimed in. We will see what Governor Spitzer does with this bill on his desk right now. He's only got a few more days to make a decision on it one way or the other for more state funding to address the issues in public housing right now. City Councilwoman Rosie Mendez, Democrat from District 2 on the Lower East Side, David Jones of the Community Service Society, and Julia Vitula Martin of the Manhattan Institute. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and coming up in a minute, there's a new round of leapfrogging going on among the states regarding the presidential primaries. It now looks like there could be one as early as December of this year. Stay with us, and we'll see what's going on.